The Innovations Podcast for Sunday, December 5th, 2005, show number 38, coming to you from Cupertino, California. Welcome to the Killer Innovations Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Well, we should be back on track. Thanks for the break during the Thanksgiving holiday. This is the first full week after the holiday break, so I've actually been 10 days since the last podcast. So I actually got to skip one podcast in the middle there. I do appreciate the flexibility. I only got a couple of emails from people asking me where the show was at. So it was a nice little break. We're back on track. We should be back on the weekly schedule now going forward. During the break, the Killer Innovations podcast was mentioned by Adam Curry on Podfinder, which is his regular show on iTunes highlighting new and interesting podcasts. We were actually the very first show mentioned in the most recent Podfinder. I only wish that Adam would have picked a better show. I listened to it last night. A listener had dropped me an email about the mention. So I listened to it last night here in the hotel. And I sounded like I was half asleep. Hopefully I don't sound like that normally. So, it was a good little plug for the show. We're seeing a little bit of an uptick in the listeners. Not much. I'm surprised, but maybe because the it sounded like I was half asleep, so maybe listeners aren't wanting to listen to the show to get over their insomnia. It's a new month. It is December, so please remember to vote. Podcast Alley resets the vote counts at the beginning of every month. Last month, November, it was the highest vote count ever that Killer Innovations had ever received. I do really appreciate that. A lot of comments posted on the Podcast Alley site. Again, thank you very much. You can go to Podcast Alley and just search for Killer Innovations, or you can go to killerinnovations.com and click on the Podcast Alley button, and it'll take you right to the appropriate page on their site. Also, I'd like to encourage you to visit the KI community site. You can visit that again by visiting killerinnovations.com and click on the KI community button. There's a lot of really great conversations going on the site. You can also click on the feedback section and post your comments about the show, recommendations, comments on audio quality, or back catalog as to what was covered in what show, those kinds of things. Also, I would be interested in getting feedback on the audio quality. I'm changing the way that I'm recording this show to make it a little bit easier for me while I'm on the road. I picked up an M-Audio MicroTrack 24-bit audio recorder. It's a little device that is extremely convenient. I can basically whip it out of my bag, plug in a microphone, and quickly be recording wherever I'm at. I don't have to boot up the tablet every time. So I used this on last week's show, or I should say the show right before Thanksgiving. This is the second show using this new recording setup, so I would be interested in hearing from you on the audio quality. Thanks for the feedback. You can send me an email at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can also leave me a voicemail feedback line at 703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. Also, I will play one feedback message at the end of the show, please stay tuned, and you can listen in on the feedback that we got from one listener. If you have feedback, drop me an email, send me an MP3 file, or you can call the feedback line, again, 703-636-4460, and I'll play that feedback in an upcoming show. Feedback can be everything from your thoughts about the show, suggestions, questions, whatever's appropriate. So please feel free to send me the feedback. Let's go on into segment one. During this little break that I've had during the holidays, I took a little bit of time to think about kind of little rules of thumb that I've kind of learned over the years with regards to innovation. And these are, both good things and bad things. Bad from the standpoint that if you apply these rules too rigorously, you basically can miss out on potential opportunities. Good from the standpoint that they allow you to filter a large number of ideas quickly. So there's a balance in here whenever you kind of try to apply your rules of thumb or rules of innovation. And what really triggered me to think about these rules was this, I think it was this month's or last month's edition. I'm going to say it was Business Week 2.0, maybe it was Fast Company, where they were interviewing, industry leaders about kind of the one rule of life that they go by. And you had a pretty wide range of, altruistic kind of rules. And it kind of triggered me to think about if I had to put together a kind of a the McKinney rules of innovation, what would they be? So here they are. Take them or leave them. Feel free to send me, your own additions to the rule set. But we're going to start off with at least initially four of them, and we'll add to them as appropriate. So, rule number one, the same problems and solutions occur again and again. Again, number one, the same problems and solutions occur again and again. Now, what I'm not saying is it's the exact same problem and the exact same solution. I'm saying the problems you have, more than likely, the solution has already been found, but it's been found maybe in a different industry sector, a different geography, maybe different time. Da Vinci solved the issue of a tank, but it was many hundreds of years later before the first tank was built. So the same problems and solutions occur again and again. Rule number two, the strongest innovations identify and eliminate conflicts. Now you could exchange the word conflict for problems or challenges. So the strongest innovations identify and eliminate conflicts. And again, you can look at the innovations that have been wildly successful. And the conflicts or the problems they eliminated may not have initially been obvious, but over time. Think about probably the leading innovation that's had the largest impact on society on a worldwide basis is the invention of penicillin. So here's one invention that, is eliminating primarily infections that were occurring during the war, but its impact on society such that I'm trying to figure out what it is. It's almost like three, it's extended the lifespan of humans by a factor of three. So three times longer lifespan today than we had when we were before penicillin. Is that right? Maybe two times, if I think about the math here in the back of an envelope. But nothing has had that significant of an impact on extending the lifespan of people. Rule number three, technology trends are highly predictable. Now, many of you may not agree with that, but I'll show you here in a second what I mean. But technology trends are highly predictable. And then rule number four, complexity leads to failure in the market. Complexity leads to the failure in the market. We've all seen it. Complexity in your organization, complexity in the process, complexity in the product or service, complexity of government regulations, import-export rules. Complexity leads to failure in the market. So let's walk through some examples. For rule number one, talking about problems and solutions, what I'm talking about here is that solutions change, but the functions that are being provided by them stay the same. So let's give an example here. One, we all have to communicate. Now, in this case, I'm communicating to you via this MP3 file that you downloaded onto some player or you're sitting there listening to on your laptop, but we're communicating. Well, in the past, communication was, by face-to-face only, then it was the written word, then it was the mail, then we had phone lines, all the way up through now where most people now have some kind of a mobile phone technology, most likely GSM. Now, The need for communication is always going to be there. The solution that's going to get applied is going to change over time. At the same time, I may have another problem, such as designing a new toothbrush. But designing a new toothbrush is a function. What the solution is I'm cleaning something, and I'm cleaning something that is a solid, your teeth. Now, typically, people would have thought that there was really no way to improve on a toothbrush, but now you're seeing things like Sonicare, where you either get vibration or you get the water jets shooting in to clean. And there's clearly an innovation to the process of cleaning your teeth. But again, it was taking a look at what the problem was. Toothbrush was not the problem. Cleaning your teeth was the function. The solution in this case was cleaning something that was solid. Look out at other ways to clean solid items using, power washing, water jets, and therefore was able to translate some that approach into creating an entirely new way for you to clean your teeth. So the problems and the solutions exist. They may not have been matched up to each other to give you that breakthrough idea. The other point here is that someone somewhere has already solved the problem. So in this case, talking about how do I go and identify, these new kinds of areas? Well, one is, here's an example. Let's say you want to build a strong table, but you don't want it to be a heavy table, meaning I want something that's sturdy, but I don't want the thing to be made out of solid oak, meaning that once it's in the house, I would never be able to move it again. So the criteria is that it has to be strong, but not heavy. So not define it by what does a table look like. Define it based on the solution. Strong, not heavy. Well, what other industries or what other technologies or what other companies or what other markets have to deal with strong but not heavy? Well, it could be airplanes. They need to be strong but not heavy. The space shuttle. Shoes. Need to be strong. I mean, I don't want them to fall apart, but I don't also don't want shoes that weigh 10 pounds each. Cars. So there's lots of things out there. So are there things you can go look at in airplanes, shoes, how they did the space shuttle, cars, a variety of different areas where I have to build something that's strong but not heavy, and then back it into and apply it to how do I build and design a table that is strong but not heavy. So the function is the table, the solution is strong and heavy. How do I go apply that, and how do I go find other ideas coming from other solution areas out there in the marketplace? The other one, I'm not going to be able to go through and give you examples on every one of the rules, but the other one that I want to pick up here that I know a number of you are probably bristling at already is where I talk about technology trends are predictable. Now, I'm not saying that you can be exactly predictive on something that doesn't exist, but once you understand basic trajectory of technologies and you can identify the first one or two data points, you can quickly identify where the follow-on trajectory is going to take that technology. Now, let me give you an example. Now, this example talks about the fact that there's a te the one technology trend, and this is one area that I track pretty heavily, but one trend that you can look at is characteristics of technology that start off as being immobile, meaning it's fixed in shape, size, and function. The next step of that is going to be what I would call a single joint, meaning it's somewhat flexible. Third step is what I would call multiple joint, meaning it's highly flexible. The fourth is what I would call completely flexible. The fifth is what I would call liquid or gas, meaning it's a liquid form of activity. And the last is field, meaning that it's literally not a liquid or gas, but some kind of other kind of a mechanism. So, I mean, this might be a little complex. I'm trying to do this in a podcast, and normally I do this on a whiteboard, and I'm sitting here at a desk waving my hands trying to convey this. But hopefully you're getting the point here. So here are basically six steps of technology. And probably the best thing is, let me give you an example. So what do I mean by immobile? Well, think about it as something, a common tool or item that you use today, a knife. It's fixed in shape. You use it to cut things. And you know, you see your kitchen knife and your carving knife for cutting up things in the kitchen. So if I take that knife and move it on to what I would call the next step, which is a single joint, what do you get? Well, you get scissors. So single joint. Now I have that single joint in order to give me a new kind of capability or a new kind of function, which is the scissoring. What happens if I get multiple joints in there? Well, one would be things like wire cutters. I have these complex set of wire cutter strippers, single squeeze, and it's got a complex set of cams in it that allow me to strip wires, you know, very, very quickly. But what about liquid or gas? Well, what about water cutting? And that's the big thing you see now with cutting of metals, where they use high pressure water jets to literally etch out and cut, you know, metal or other kinds of materials. And then if I take that to what I would call this field, meaning that it's not liquid or it's not gas, think about it as laser cutters. So it's really not using anything that literally is touching the item. You're using basically a laser. So all of these things do cutting, but they have this natural progression. So think about it, years ago, if you'd known about this progression and you saw knives and scissors and wire cutters, and you knew that a liquid or gas approach was going to be coming, and you knew eventually that there was going to be a field approach to doing that, what would it look like? You could apply it to things like even a ruler. So think about it. Rulers used to be fixed in length, right? So you had that yardstick that we all had growing up in school. Then you had the folding ruler that carpenters and such used to have. So that's kind of that, you know, joints. Then you had tape measures, which were completely flexible. I could coil them up. I've got the automatic retracting, you know, tape measure. And then I had kind of the liquid or gas version. I have the ultrasound. So I had ultrasound ability to quickly measure, you know, distances that way. And then in the case of what I called this field approach, I could use laser measuring. So I could measure from one wall to another to get the exact dimensions of a room using a laser. So you see this progression of technologies. The key is that you have to understand what is the progression of a variety of different technology trends. Once you understand that, and they're different for every field, they're different for every, could be even based on geography. So there may be something going on in one region that's ahead of another region that you can also use. The key is whatever the trend is for your industry. So in this case, you know, whether it's immobile, single joint, multi-joint, completely flexible, liquid gas, or field, if those don't match up to your industry, the key is to go back into history and look at a variety of different technologies. And you can even look at them across other industries. You know, you could think about it as really being immobile, somewhat flexible, very flexible, completely flexible. No physical means to connect, meaning, you know, liquid or gas as another way. So if I applied this into an industry that I'm very familiar with, which would be telecommunications, so in this case it would be immobile, meaning the old dime phones where I had to call an operator in order to make the connection, and then somewhat flexible where I could do direct dial numbering within the local area. Completely flexible, I could call any number in the world, you know, through digital switching, And then eventually you could look at it from the liquid gas field kind of an approach as being wireless. So again, you can apply this to a variety of different technologies, but this is a way to look at trajectories and therefore be able to look at and predict what the next technology step would be in the industry or the space that you're in. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to segment number two. In today's segment number two, we're going to talk about what I call virtual anthropology. Now, the question I always get is, how do you spot trends? Well, one is for my case, I spend a lot of time on websites. And that's what I really mean by this virtual anthropology. You scan basically what people put up on display, whether that's websites, blogs, social networks, Flickr, looking at photographs, chat. One of the things that my kids, who are all in college, have had to learn is they have to be a little careful about what they put on their away message on their IM chat, because I read it. If I see that they're away, I'll click to see what their away message is. And you learn a lot by reading someone's away message. People put things in there that, in many cases, if they really thought about that, the general population could read that, it's probably not something they want people to know. So my kids get sometimes shocked where they will call me up, usually to ask me for money, but they'll call me up to just to chat, and I'll mention something that I saw in their away message, and they are just totally shocked and dumbfounded about how I knew. How did I know they were went out to dinner with so and so? How did I know that they were, they waited and didn't get their homework done and were up cramming for the test for the next day? It's very simple. I read the away message. So there's a lot of things that we can learn about people by what they put on display. Now, keep in mind that it's really about finding out what your customers want or may want. And what you're trying to determine is what could or should you do to serve them. So you're trying to look for commonality of people out there, insight that you just normally don't have. You have to be curious, you have to be inquisitive. Now, this is not about spying. This is not about trying to snoop on your customers or trying to mask what you're trying to do or try to be sneaky. Rule here, never sell directly to those whose post you observe. So if you go out to Flickr and you see something of interest and you see a photograph that kind of gives you an insight that that customer could use a product or service, resist the temptation. Don't do it. Don't go out there and then try to use this scanning approach to then go off and sell one-on-one with the customer. This is an anthropology exercise. You're trying to gain insights. You're not trying to find an individual customer to go sell to. You do that, and you will clearly turn that customer off, and you will set a bad precedence for yourself. The word will get out, and it just is, it's just bad news. So don't resist the temptation. Don't do it. So what are some sites that you can go look at? Go out to Flickr, and there's a tag called What's in Your Bag. These are people, typically women, who have dumped out their purses and laid out the items that are in their purse. They take a photograph and they post it to Flickr. So it's actually amazing when you look at, what a woman carries in the purse, what are the items that are common across all these photographs. Amazingly, the mobile phone is the one thing that always seems to be in that purse, and there are other things, but it gives you huge insight into what women carry. And there's other tags like that that exist out there in Flickr. And I'm a big Flickr fan just from the standpoint of being able to go out there and scan the social community to identify what's emerging. For those of you who are regular visitors to the KI community site, you know that I also take some Flickr photos and I'll post them up there under weak signals, what I call visual triggers, to initiate some kind of conversation about what's being posted. So, Flickr. Another one is buzznet.com. So you can go out to buzznet.com, take a look. They've got a variety of different ways to post photographs and look at kind of what's the hot thing or cool thing that's going on. So again, Flickr, Buzznet, and I'm sure there are many others. If you have other sites that you go to where you kind of do this virtual anthropology of what's going on in the marketplace, go ahead and post them up to the community site or send me an email and I'll post them and we can get a conversation going on that. So again, it's really a way to spot the trends. It's really about scanning what people put on display. In this case, websites, blogs, social networks, away messages, photographs, whatever. But remember, it's not about spying, and you never sell directly to those posts who you've observed. It's really about how to find out what your customers want. It's your ability to get plugged in without having to incur the entire expense of going out and doing a big field exercise in order to talk to the customers. Apologize for the voice here today. I'm kind of suffering from a cold, so hopefully you can tolerate it through here for the rest of the show. Let's go ahead and move on to segment number three, Killer Question of the Week. This week's killer question is, who does not understand how to use my product? Who does not understand how to use my product? And remember, that can be product or service. Or better yet, if you're looking to take to be aggressive on going after a competitor or somebody who's already in the market, then you can ask the question, who does not understand how to use my competitor's product? Now the question seems simple. Seems like we can answer that right away. Anybody can use my product. It's very simple. Something as simple as I operate a fast food. How hard is it for someone to figure out how to use my product? It's not that simple. This is a true test of getting into the shoes of your customers. Now, I'm going to reveal a little bit about myself here. I personally will avoid trying something new if I can't quickly identify how. So, for instance, I was at an airport. To be quite honest, I can't even remember which one it was. It was probably one here in the last month, so it's got to be California or Boston. I can't remember which one it was. But there was this long counter, basically, the new airline policy where you don't get served food, so you're grabbing a quick sandwich, toss it in a bag to get onto an airplane. Well, this counter was this long counter. There was no obvious sign that said, order here, pick up here. It was literally chaotic in front of the counter. You stood there, you weren't quite sure if you were the next one in line, somebody else was there in front of you, you didn't know where to order, you didn't know, do I get it here? Do I stand down there? Do you got to carry the sandwich to me to do the cash? How do I do this? And I stood there for like 30 seconds, could not figure out where the line was or what the mechanism was going to be. I walked across and used somebody else's. So I will personally avoid using a product or service, or in this case, just using a fast food restaurant, because I couldn't quickly identify how to use the service. I also do this where I can't figure out how to easily get assistance in a store. Now, this could be a man-woman thing. My wife is one that she'll literally chase the salesperson down the aisle and tackle them to get help. If there's not an easily mechanism where I can simply quickly identify who the salesperson is, that's my one frustration. But two, if I can't quickly figure out that if they're not here, I know where to go to get them, then I'm not going to ask for assistance. I'll leave the store and I'll go someplace else. Because I am not going to have to try to figure out the process of how to get help. The point here is it's really not talking about skill, but it's how do you convey how do you use the product or service easily. Now I'm talking about services here, whether it's getting help in a store or eating or getting food ordered at a fast food restaurant. But the same thing applies if you've got the most high-tech product or the lowest tech servers or capabilities. So don't assume you can pick out how to answer the question. In fact, this is really a great killer question that you need to ask others or More importantly, if you can, observe your customers. You know, if you're the manager at a fast food restaurant, don't be behind the counter. Go stand across the street. Go stand in the corner. Go sit in the booth away from the and watch how your customers interact. When you see a customer that's hesitant, you see a customer looking around that can't figure the process out, you know you got a problem. There's nothing you need to go fix. So again, this week's killer question is, who does not understand how to use my product or service? Or you can reword this differently as, who does not understand how to use my competitors' products or services? And with that, thanks for listening. Remember to vote. This is the first show of December, so Podcast Alley resets the vote count. So please go visit out to Podcast Alley and vote. It's the easiest way for you to say thanks to the producers of your favorite podcast for the work and effort and the cost they incur in putting together the podcast that you enjoy. Keep the feedback coming. You can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can send me a feedback message at 703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at Phil_McKinney. At the end, I'm going to play a recent audio feedback message that came in during the holiday break here. So please stay beyond the end to listen to the feedback message. If you have an audio feedback, send me an email and I'll play it on an upcoming podcast. That feedback can be questions, comments, suggestions, it can even be criticisms. I'm looking to constantly improve the podcast, so if you have ideas, if you also have particular subject matters that you're interested in, please send them to me. Thanks for the vote. Thanks for the support. Thanks for listening. Get subscribed. Get others to subscribe. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Hey, Phil. This is Patrick. I'm calling from São Paulo, Brazil. All I want to say is thank you very much for your podcast. It has been very illuminating in helping me structure innovation inside my company. I've discovered your podcast about a month ago, and all I can say is I am amazed. I've been spending the last month trying to get caught up. I'm almost done listening to everything. I can't wait for more stuff to come up. Again, thank you very much and congratulations. It's an amazing thing that you're doing for us.